I don't have anything to say.
Well, I do, but it might not be interesting to anyone.
I have secrets inside of me and struggles. I don't know if I'm ready to share them.
I want to hear what you have to say.
I want to speak of the deepest things together.
I want to hear what you dream about, what you hope for.
I want to know how you have come to arrive at this resting point along your journey.
What if I speak and you don't understand me?
I will listen and listen again until my hearing becomes understanding.
What if I can't find the words to share the world inside of me?
I believe that wise words will emerge from you.
How can I trust you to hold my life stories? You who I may not even know.
By knowing that as I receive part of your story, I will give you part of mine.
How will this work? What will happen? What awaits us?
We can find out anything by beginning.
Let us begin to listen and trust and to know one another more deeply.
I do believe that the Reverend Erica Hewart, author of this morning's reading, got it right. We need to start talking to one another and trusting and respecting. We need to respect and trust one another to actually take the time to listen, really listen. Now, Unitarian Universalists are all about taking roads less traveled. Member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, in fact, of which we are one, are called upon to affirm and promote, in part, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in all of our congregations. When it comes to certain personal choices, however, we aren't quite so open and accepting. As a self-identified liberal, primarily Christian organization, there's a long list of things we're quite willing to accept. This particular congregation, in fact, went through the rather arduous process a number of years back to become what is known among Unitarian Universalists as a welcoming congregation. Now, that's all well and good. However, imagine for just a moment one of our younger members suddenly announcing during coffee hour that they are leaving a wildly successful career in the academic track at their local high school and signing up for half days of training in welding, cosmetology, or auto body at the VOTEC. Now, everyone will love them still and will respect their decision, of course. But I suggest that some smiles in the dining room might look a bit forced as thoughts of, what is this child thinking? Flash through startled minds. As UUs, we're used to people moving off the grid. Hewitt, for example, tells a familiar story of being raised in the Midwest by a liberal United Methodist minister and a clinical psychologist. While a graduate student at Tulane University, I discovered Unitarian Universalism and decided not to complete my PhD, she says. I moved to Berkeley to attend seminary and was ordained as a UU minister on December 5th, 2004. That career, however, was not what was meant to be. The time would come, Hewitt's story continues, when she took a long look at the life she'd created and decided, not this after all. I want something different. She goes on to explain that some people might get a tattoo or go skydiving to shake things up. But I want even bigger. I quit my job, sold my belongings, and moved from the palm trees of Southern California to the woods of Maine. Mind you, I had neither a job nor community there. Is that brave, crazy, or both? What I did have was a longing for adventure, a teeny fear that I'd made a mistake, and faith in spirit, my term for the current that carries and guides us, whose voice asked me to trust that all would be well. Well, so far, so good, as they say. It is, friends, she explains. It is so well. When I wake up every morning, I look around at my life and think, this, I love this. What happened to Hewitt is that Maine caught her and held on. Its people quickly became my tribe, she recalls. When you find home, everything inside you simultaneously rejoices and is at peace. My trust in spirit was cemented, even as I learned to trust myself. To honor these lessons, my license plate says, you be brave. Along the way, she's created a hybrid ministry consisting of these pieces at the moment. Now, each year, she officiates at about 30 weddings in and around Maine. She's a writer and a creator of worship materials that help people follow her journey of meaning making. She teaches meditation and yoga, inviting people to connect with their own souls and with the source of all that's life-giving. She serves as the halftime minister of the Midcoast UU Fellowship, which she describes as, and I quote, a congregation that maxes my joy meter. How much are we looking forward to having someone say that about us? And every day, every single day, she offers gratitude for the voice of spirit that continues to lead her onward, and she asks for further instructions. Now, Hewitt's story strays a bit beyond the beaten path, but to be honest, I'd still describe that as being pretty white-collar. Ditto for the UUA in general, which is pretty white, too, but that's a topic for another day. Let's pause for just a moment to talk about collar color. Specifically, blue, white, and pink. For the purposes of our discussion here today, blue collar refers to a working class person historically working for hourly rates of pay while performing manual labor. Although this distinction is fading, blue collar has in the past implied a certain lack of worker education. I would suggest that it implies a certain lack of worker education to people who don't have a clue what they're doing, what that worker is doing. Anyway, white collar refers to workers known for earning high average salaries and not performing manual labor at their jobs, which are usually performed in an office, cubicle, or other administrative setting. That's the career that our young student is rejecting, at least in the minds of many, with the decision to pursue a technical education. And pink collar refers to a worker, usually but not always a woman, whose labor is related to customer interaction, entertainment, sales, or other service-related work. What, by the way, does a collar have to do with it? You might legitimately ask. Anybody know? I do. Most manual laborers at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century wore blue shirts, which could hold a little more dirt around the collar without the dirt really standing out. This working class identifier is in contrast to the white collar worker, whose historically higher paying salaried positions go with their clean and pressed white shirts and ties. When women entered the labor force, they had to come up with something, so they just called it pink. Now, today's blue collar workers, however, can be formally educated, skilled, and highly paid, increasingly earning more annually than their white collared counterparts. With the help of Amy Riche and our wildly popular house band, music reflecting a strong and often forgotten blue collar heritage is being heard in our sanctuary today. Thank you all for making that happen. Now, in Labor Day 2015, the Reverend Don Beaudriot opened his sermon at First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church in Brewster, Massachusetts, with the words, "What? You think there are no classes within our free and liberal religious movement? Think again." I know there are various social classes within Unitarian Universalism, because as a minister, I have served people from all of them. And I know how some are faking it, faking where they came from. And that would sometimes be me. "So I want to confess," he continues, "I am a blue-collar Unitarian Universalist. Not only that, but over the years, from when I first attended a Unitarian Universalist church 53 years ago until now, I have, upon occasion, felt discriminated against. So, you see, what I am talking about this morning is the subject of inclusivity, which we certainly talk about a lot within these walls. Or to use another current term, diversity. Now, I bring this up," he continues to confess, "because I myself have sometimes felt left out by UUs who come from formally educated families and or were born and raised as Unitarians or Universalists, or as a combined version of those two faiths. I bring this up because that I know that some other UUs have felt like I do. Over the years, when I have occasionally come out as blue-collar UU to those whose backgrounds have been similar, I tell them, in a sad and longing way, that this free faith movement could be much larger, much, if those who are currently in the pews and the pulpits would reach out to those who might very well be unlike themselves in most ways, except for the fact that they too believe in a non-doctrinal, non-dogmatic, non-creedal approach to religion, which propounds an ethical approach to living on this planet. Ironically, the difference between Unitarian and Universalist movements, anyone know what this is? Traditionally? I'm not seeing hands. Ran much more along class and cultural lines than theological ones. We've sort of heard the Unitarian perspective, Universalist perspective, but I had never heard this one before. The Unitarians originally attracted white-collar people, professionals, educators, cultural leaders, those kind of folks. The Universalist congregations were comprised mostly of blue-collar working-class people, such as farmers and fishermen. Now, by the middle of the 20th century, those distinctions had blurred, making a merger both possible and financially necessary for the survival of two religions. But it took a long time to get there. After several years of discussion and negotiation during the 1950s, the Unitarian Universalist Association was formed in 1961. Now, the thing is, these class distinctions are continuing to blur in the workplace, as it's revealed that while many traditionally blue-collar assembly line-type jobs are easily transformed either to faraway countries or to robots, others are not. At the same time, many pink and white collar jobs are being broken down into the kind of mindless, easily reproducible compartmentalization that has decimated the blue collar ranks. The good news, according to Matthew B. Crawford, author of Shop Class's Soulcraft, An Inquiry into the Value of Work, which inspired this whole thing in my head, is that the non-routinized manual work that remains outside the confines of the factory would seem to be resistant to much further routinization. In other words, the blue-collar jobs that haven't already been eliminated may pretty much be here to stay. There will be exceptions, but according to Crawford, the holder of a PhD in philosophy who abandoned the rarefied atmosphere of college classrooms and Washington think tanks to open a motorcycle repair shop, the physical circumstances of the jobs performed by carpenters, plumbers, and auto mechanics vary too much for them to be executed by idiots. They require circumspection and adaptability. One feels like a human being, not a clog in a machine. The trades are then a natural home for anyone, including our high schooler, who would live by their own powers, free not only of deadening abstraction, but also of the insidious hopes and rising insecurities that seem to be endemic in our current economic life. Details may differ, but Hewitt and Crawford have arrived at remarkably similar conclusions when it comes to what they see as being important in their own careers. So what advice would this happy philosopher turned mechanic offer to a young person? By all means, go to college, Crawford says. In fact, approach college in the spirit of craftsmanship, going deep into liberal arts and sciences. In the summer, learn a manual trade. You're likely to be less damaged and quite possibly better paid as an independent tradesman than as a cubicle-dwelling tender of information systems. There is, of course, a caveat. To heed such advice would require a certain contrarian streak, as it entails rejecting a life course mapped out by others as obligatory and inevitable, he says. Unfortunately, if our blue-collar minister, speaking less than 2 years ago, is to be believed, UU doors might be expected to remain closed to pioneers like Caldwell. Unless, that is, we listen to Hewitt. You be brave. And now, if you would care to rise in body or in spirit, we will have closing hymn number 182.